Welcome to another episode of Digital in Aesthetics with me, Rick O'Neill, and one of my awesome friends and colleagues from the medical aesthetics sector. Hope you enjoy and see you on the other side. Okay, right, we're getting into it. And we are joined today live from, somewhere in Canada, he'll tell us, by the man, the myth, the legend, Nathan Strom, aka the revenue, or at least half of the revenue doctors, and at least a quarter of the aesthetic coaching quarter, right? Yeah, right. A complimentary podcast. Now, there I was, minding my own business, and you turned up in my inbox, Nathan.
I did.
Sometime last year. And said, we're smashing it, but we need some digital stuff.
Yeah.
And so I looked into you guys. You'd looked into me. And next thing you know, we're in Paris at the Garnier, the National Opera, quaffing champagne and dancing in the basement.
We had a couple of pints that night, didn't we?
What a night. What a night.
Yeah, your wife is an amazing dancer.
That's true. Yeah, that's one of the things.
She was dominating the dance floor that night.
Well, I'll let her know you said so. She'll be delighted. and you guys, I mean, you yourself and George are hilarious. So it was great fun. But I'd love you to kind of just give us your bio, introduce you to this UK audience, mostly UK. There's some Aussies in here, I think. Tell us who you are, mate, and what is the revenue doctors?
Yeah, so I suppose my journey in the medical aesthetics world started about 12 to 13 years ago when I moved to Canada to follow. I'm originally from New Zealand. People can probably hear my accent. I followed my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, and
always the way.
Yeah, the beautiful mother of my three beautiful children. We moved back from New Zealand over to Canada, and I started in the pharmaceutical world. I actually worked for a smaller company called Activist at the time that eventually got brought out by Allergan. So then I started working for Allergan, and I was in the women's health space. When we made the move to Allergan, I got introduced to obviously the whole team in Allergan, and there was this obviously an amazing drug called Botox that Allergan looks after. And that was my first kind of introduction at a national sales meeting into the medical aesthetic world. And when you turn up to a big conference like that, working for a big company, you sort of get pigeonholed into your little sections. And I'm in the pharmaceutical section, and I'm looking to my right, and I'm seeing how much fun all the aesthetic medicine guys and girls are having. And I was like, I wonder how I get over there.
Yeah.
So I actually got an opportunity to work with Botox in the chronic migraine area space. And I always wanted to move more into the cosmetic space. But at the time, I had a few managers that pretty much said to me that they didn't think I could cut it in the aesthetic medicine space.
What do they know?
Yeah. And I needed more experience. And that kind of, if you know me well, I'm a pretty competitive person. That kind of stuck with me, and I wanted to prove them wrong. So I had an opportunity to move to a well-known skincare company in Canada. And that's when my journey kind of started.
So this is about a decade ago, right?
Yeah, this is 12 years ago. Yeah. Thanks. So it's, yeah, so it's.
So a lot's happened since. We're going to get into that.
A lot has happened since. Yeah. So my first taste was, I suppose my first taste was at Allergan, because I was doing Botox for chronic migraine. But my first real taste was in the skincare world, which is still my true passion in this industry. I'm a big believer in skincare. I think not just from a revenue point of view for clinics, but also from a patient results standpoint as well. I think skincare is the glue that holds the clinic together and kind of holds everything in this industry together, in my opinion. Yeah,
that makes complete sense from my perspective on the kind of on the marketing side, on the kind of funnel side of things, getting people back in on a more regular basis. You know, the glue is the right word, I think.
It ticks all the boxes, doesn't it? Like you can sell skincare 24/7 as a successful aesthetic practice.
Yeah.
And I love what you just said then, getting people back in the door. I think that's your job as a digital marketer, right? For your clients, is to find ways to get obviously new people in the door and existing clients back in the door. And skincare is like a wonderful tool for that.
Also, it was great during COVID in the first lockdowns.
100%.
That was the big strategy. We persuaded all of our clients and the members of our group to go straight to online skin consultations and shipping product remotely, etc. And it kept a lot of the guys going because they couldn't open their clinics; they weren't allowed to do that. So.
Yeah, it was so important, even in Canada here, and we locked down for longer than you guys did at times. It was like it made people, I think it made a lot of clinics appreciate skincare so much more. And I think it even made the customer or the patient appreciate skincare more, because they couldn't go for their monthly or bi-monthly sessions to their clinics. They were having to do like take home pills or take home masks, you know, and
absolutely.
And it was the webinars that a lot of clinics were doing. It was great to see some of the clinics really pivot and been doing like online webinars on how to do a mask at home or your five-step routine to success. Like from my point of view, being such a skincare buff, I was like, brilliant. It's about time people are taking skincare
seriously. Now we're talking.
Yeah, exactly.
And ironically, the more webinars you got them on, the more they had to look at themselves on the camera.
Exactly.
And
it blew up our industry, didn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like going on about COVID, but it was a pretty big deal, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah.
What's that word they will keep using? Unprecedented. I'm just going to drop that in there, ironically, just because I think we're all sick of hearing it. So, I mean, a lot is going to happen in a decade. I'm not going to ask you to walk me through
every day
on a weekly basis what has happened, but what have been like the big challenges or the big like moments since 10 years ago when you were kind of looking across at the aesthetics folk saying they seem to be having a good time now, like doing one of your kind of rock star entrances with George at a Cynosure gig, for example? Like what's happened in the big moments or the big the moments where opportunity has come knocking or been unlocked? What are some of the big ones that have happened that have led you to where you are now?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was, I think where I did quite well from the skincare game is I came in with a fresh outlook of the industry, and I was prepared to throw a lot of ideas at the wall. Some of them would stick, some of them wouldn't. And during that time, I moved into the national sales manager role for the skincare company that I was working with. And in three years, I was able to take them from $6 million a year to $12 million in sales. And George, my business partner now at the Revenue Doctors, he was a huge part of that as well. And it really came down to like relationships. I think as a sales manager at that company, I got on the road and I just hustled. I made sure I was in front of every single clinic that I could possibly get into with obviously my team. And it was just all about developing relationships and helping build strategy for these clinics that helped drive their revenue. It wasn't about the skincare. It was about, and we'll probably talk about that later in the podcast, like how can manufacturers support businesses like me now that I own my own clinic?
Yeah, 100%.
I looked at the industry from a consulting side of things rather than a, hey, I've got this cool skincare. Do you want to sell it in your clinic for me? I would rather go in and say, hey, what are the challenges you're currently having? And what can I do? These are my strengths. What can I do to help grow your business? And as a result, if I grow your business, you're going to sell more of my skincare. So we're both going to benefit from this relationship.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, there's some amazing products. There's some really good devices. There's, you know, all sorts of treatment types. But at the end of the day, if you cannot position that as a solution to someone's problem, and if you don't have the kind of tools and tools in terms of assets, but also psychological and soft skill tools to be able to sell that stuff, then it could be the best product on the planet, but it doesn't make any difference, right?
Yeah, I agree. I liken it to what my oldest daughter is going through right now at school. I live in Ottawa, Canada. It's the capital of Canada for those who don't know in the UK, and we're right on the Quebec border, which is the French and the English side. So my oldest daughter's lucky enough to go to a full French school, which I think is a great opportunity for young kids to learn another language. And they do a presentation once a week. And a lot of my friends say, oh, that's a bit of hard work being a parent, having to, you know, prepare your child for a presentation. I'm like, I think it's brilliant because in this world, you can have the greatest idea in the world, but if you can't present it well, it never gets heard. And you can have an average idea, but if you present it well, it can sometimes take off. And I think
there's plenty of those.
Yeah, exactly. I think
I completely agree with that. It's your ability to kind of tell a story about something,
100%,
and to bring people with you is everything.
That's what we do on a daily basis, whether you're working for a device company, a skincare company, or you're consulting in clinic. I think the very successful people in our industry, and you do this on a daily basis with your clients because you are the digital team for a lot of your clients. It's all about telling a story, and that story has to be unique to you, and it has to be an authentic story. And those people that are able to tell that story, whether it's digitally, whether it's in the consult room, or whether it's in a business meeting, those people that have that ability, or those teams that have that ability of that amazing storytelling and that authentic storytelling, I think they're always going to be the most successful people, not just in our industry. I think every single industry in the world.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. It's the, and for, I think we'll get a bit more specific on manufacturers and brands in a minute, how they can support people. But I think it's a good moment to kind of go in a bit deeper on two things. I want to hear about your clinic, of course. So give us the backstory in the clinic, but then let's dive into what you and George are doing on stage on a one-to-one basis with your coaching clients and your consulting clients over in the US and Canada as well.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll start with the revenue doctors, because then it's kind of like a timely. So George and I were working for a very successful skincare company. COVID hit. People started reaching out to us because we had a reasonably good brand in the industry, individually as well as obviously working for a skincare company. We decided that we needed to keep our individual brand going, but also keep in touch with doctors in the industry and professionals in the industry. So we thought, we're at home doing nothing, having a few beers every night anyway, why don't we start a podcast similar to this, where we interview people about their career and what they love about the medical aesthetic industry, and we go for some of like the doctor celebrities out there across North America, and we called it Skinterviews. And we started doing this podcast, and it kind of took off, and we had quite a lot of viewership. Like, some of our videos were getting like 20,000 views on YouTube, and people started messaging us going, how do we get on the platform? Like, this is awesome. Who are you going to interview next? You should ask these people these questions. But also back behind stage, like off the camera, we were also getting these doctors saying, hey, can you help us with your consulting? Like, can you consult us in your clinic? Like, we're struggling, our clinic shut down. What do you think we should be doing? And we were giving away free advice.
Yeah.
And I sort of said to George, and George said to me, he's like, we could make some money out of this. So we had a couple of clinics reach out and say, hey, we want to hire you guys. And so that was kind of the start of what we call the revenue doctors. And we're not doctors. We call ourselves the revenue doctors because we like to think that we help doctors grow their revenue.
Yeah.
But not just doctors. Like, a lot of our clients now are nurses, nurse practitioners, yeah, medical estheticians. And yeah, our role in a clinic is to help clinics bring people in the door, make it an amazing experience once they're in the door, and then find ways to get people back in the door. And where we're very strong, George and I, where I believe we're strong, is the patient journey or the patient experience part of it. We love going into clinics and helping them be true to themselves, be true to their brand, and build a story around their clinic and what they're looking to achieve for their patients. So, and we don't just do it from a business point of view, we also do it from a clinical point of view, where George is pretty strong in regards to training on devices, and we're both strong on training on, obviously, the consult part of it. Like, that's my favorite part. I love consulting patients. I love that. So from there, we spent almost 3 years now working for the revenue doctors, and we picked up a big client with a global device company called Cynosure. And what we do is, on stage, we help MC their events in North America, and we also run workshops at their events, and we give them like 10 topics to choose from, and they just kind of each event they pick another topic for us to talk about on stage. And we like to make the events like you do with your, you know, your black belt events. Like, I think I've been to so many over the years, I've been to so many pharmaceutical and medical events, and some of them can be like ridiculously boring.
Yeah.
But George and I like to bring a little bit of flavor, like you do, bringing your Taekwondo, or
you've got to have a theme, and you've got to get the energy going, haven't you?
So we always like to come out with a bit of a song and a dance, and we try and make education fun, because it's a long day to sit down at a conference all day, especially after that lunch break, people start to fall asleep.
Yeah.
So we're big believers in this industry is fun, and it should be fun. And we like to make it as fun as possible. So that's what we do.
Obviously I've been out with you guys and I've seen on your stuff online, but we're working behind the scenes to pull together our skill sets for something soon, right?
Yeah, 100%.
which is why you're here. So we're going to, you're talking on my poddy, I'm going to come on your poddy.
Yeah.
But then I'm due at some point in the US, and then we're going to do something for these guys. Cause I thought which is what you said in your very first message to me, there's this bit at the end to kind of take what you guys do and then smash it online, which is the digital marketing piece.
Yeah, and I take my hat off to you, because I think the digital marketing piece of everything clinics do is one of the hardest things to do. It's there's just so much you can do from a digital marketing point of view. And I think you need to eventually do it all, but it's tough, man, because I don't think there's a cookie cutter. Like even my clinic now, there's no cookie cutter approach to this. Like I wish there was. And when George and I started in the industry, like started our consultancy company, we were looking for that. You know, if we can create a cookie cutter approach for everything we do in every clinic, we can scale our business really fast and life will be easy. We won't need to work. We'll just hire people to do it for us. But it's not that. It's every clinic and every area and every product or every treatment is so unique that you can't just roll the same thing you rolled out for one clinic to another. You need to get to know that clinic. You need to get to know the people who work. Like there's so much involved. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's some tried and, I mean, I won't speak for what you guys do. You can tell me in a minute, but on the digital marketing side, there's things that we've learned. Obviously I've been doing it 24 years. My agency has been going 14 years. There's things that we've learned that we know will work, but the message we're conveying and who we're conveying it to and the timing of it and the focus of it changes every time.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's different horses for courses, and different demographics, different targeting, different end of the market sometimes. So yeah, completely agree with that. In terms of when you're working directly with clinics and in your own clinic, because you just recently invested and became part of a clinic, right?
That was just to ground me, really, because I have three young kids at home and George and I travel a lot. Mm. And I'm one of those guys that I see something shiny and I'm like, yeah, let's go do it. So my marriage was tested. Obviously, last year we traveled 32 weekends of the year we were traveling. So my kids are 2, 4, and 6 now. So there's probably people listening to this podcast going, this guy's an asshole. Leaving his wife at home. And no, I have a very supportive wife, but I love the clinic. I love being in it. So I was like, you know what? I need something to ground me here in Ottawa and keep me here on the regular more for my family's sake. And so
I'm guessing it's also a pretty good test bed for anything you want to go and talk about.
100%. The other thing is George and I use it as a, like one of our presentations right now is we're doing for Cynosure on the road is how to successfully launch a device in 60 days. And we use my clinic as a case study for it.
Love it.
And we're using true numbers and data and like results from it, which is kind of powerful to be able to say. And then if anyone on stage is kind of like, oh yeah, whatever. Well, we physically do it, you know?
Show them. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's, by the way, we need to come and do that with some of the stuff we've been doing for your clinic. And then we'll go out with those case studies because I'm doing a similar thing at the moment. I'm just doing this. So you referenced my black belt digital marketing thing. That's my current theme and I'm going to stick with it until people get fed up with it. And I'm doing 6 webinars with Mertz over the next 6 weeks. And it's broken down into the key areas of digital marketing. But it's all based on data from the digital academy that we built in partnership with Mertz, where we've now coached getting on for 200 clinics in their digital marketing. And so we've got data from when they started to 3 months later, and we can show if you do these things that we're teaching, all of these numbers, including the most important one, the revenue, go from here to here. And we can show it for the really cool thing about it, because you can tell us about the Canadian and North American market, but in the UK, there's a very long tail, should we say, to the market, which is lots of one person, small businesses that some of them don't even work full time up to at the other side of the scale. You've got multi-location clinics that are doing multiple 7 figures, and both of those types of people and everyone in between are in that academy. And so we can show that for the people just starting, made an enormous difference. But even the people that are by all accounts kind of smashing it, they had still neglected several areas of digital, and we unlocked more scale, even though they were at that level. So I think when you can come in, and this is where we kind of come into how do manufacturers and brands support the practitioners, their customers. When you can come into a group like that and say, this is what we teach, this is the data that shows if you implement this, you go from here to here, you move the needle. That's a whole different conversation and a whole different level of business and marketing support around a product or a device, which is something that Mertz, and by the sound of it, Cynosure, are super committed to kind of offering their customers. So I suppose the question off the back of that is to you, what else, like, do you agree with that? And also, what else can or should pharma companies, energy device manufacturers, skincare manufacturers, what should they be doing for their customers in terms of supporting them with positioning, launching, treating, patient journeys, marketing, all of those things?
Yeah, I agree with everything you've said. I think, and you said it before, like anyone can come out with a device with radio frequency and microneedling. Like, how many neurotoxins are there in the market right now? There's so many amazing skincare lines that we have an opportunity to use as practitioners or clinic owners. For me, it's the consulting portion of it now. And I hate to give people like you and I a plug on the podcast, but we might as well. We're doing this. We're making content for people to listen to for free, so we might as well plug ourselves. I think for these manufacturers and pharma companies, like, I think it's either hiring people like you and I or partnering with people like you and I to offer that next level consultancy level. Because as a clinic owner, when like a skincare rep wants to book a meeting with me, or a device rep wants to book a meeting with me, I'm going to book the meetings with the ones that I know that are going to come in and help grow my business. Like, we're busy people. Like, I don't even have enough time for myself these days. If I'm going to spend an hour with someone, I want that hour to be added value to me. And I also want to add value to them as well, right? So
yeah, fair enough.
I'm not going to book a meeting with someone that's not going to add value. So like, come into my clinic and teach me how to drive my business.
Yeah.
And teach me how to, or give me opportunities on how to educate my staff, which is going to help drive my business. So I think that it goes back to give me continued education and give me tools to drive my business. I think they're the two main areas of that I would, if I was a CEO of a big manufacturing company, that they would be the two areas I'd be investing in: continued education and consulting and revenue driving ideas.
100% agree. I think that's where maybe things are starting to change for the better, is in that value added consulting and support from the rep, so that their focus is switching from building their sales book, flipping to building your business, which in turn builds their sales book, because it is a nuanced difference, but it is a big difference.
It's a huge difference. And you can tell when someone's authentic about that. And I always say to like all the sales guys that I talk to on a regular basis from the device side, I'm like, man, the quickest way for you to get another sale is help that current sale pay off that device. Yeah. Because like, if you can teach them how to pay off a device in 6 months, they're going to buy another device, because it's another revenue stream for me. Like, I want to have 20 devices in my clinic, because that means I've paid off the other 18. You know what I mean?
It's like installing cash machines, isn't it?
Right? Exactly. And once I've learned how to pay off 18 devices, I've probably got a pretty good approach on how to launch a device and how to pay it off quickly. So your sales funnel doesn't need to be as big. Your black book of connections probably doesn't need to be as big. It's just like being more of a farmer than a shark, you know, like farm those accounts and partner. Like, there's a difference between being like a sales rep or like a partner. Like,
yeah,
And yeah. I think that's what you explained, right? Just then when you said,
So I think it's moving, and I'd seen some job titles changing over the years to more like a product specialist or things like that, rather than a rep carrying the bag, whatever they used to call it. But yeah, that support piece I think is everything at the moment. And as you said, that I think there's some organizations in that space, manufacturing, pharmaceutical, that I would say are still a sales-led organization at their core, at the way they're structured, the way they're targeted, you know, the way they're rewarded is a sales-led and sales-focused. And then there's other organizations that are more marketing, education, and support-led.
Yeah.
They all to some degree offer all of those, but there are some that just at their core, their culture, their history are either one way or another. I'm not gonna name who I think is who on this podcast.
It could be career limiting, but
but I think when they make, because we get obviously we've got the Digital Academy that we built with Mertz. That's a true joint venture. Which is, you know, I'd say unique with a pharma company. We're not treated like a supplier. We have a partnership. Yeah. And the same goes for the people going through the program. You know, we're their digital coaches. They're partnering with us to help them increase their results. It's kind of a win-win-win, a triumvirate where everyone wins, which is great. And I think the more that, and we get inquiries from other manufacturers or distributors more recently, which are more down that road of, could we put together a partnership where each new big account that comes on board with this device or this treatment, they get from you these things to help them launch it or to help them pay back the device. Or like you said, you know, we've got 60 days to do X. And they want to kind of start rolling that in to their onboarding process.
I think it's
going in the right direction from that sense. I mean, you with your clinic hat on, you're spoiled now because you've got all these people clamoring to educate you and take you to this event and give you this package and this coaching. So I think from the customer's perspective, it's almost choice paralysis because it's like, wow, they're all trying to up their game and support me in all these ways. So which one do I partner with on that basis, on a clinical basis, on an efficacy basis? It's quite difficult, I would imagine, from the customer's perspective.
It is, but that's what we're taught from a young age. I think, like, you think when you grow up, the amount of teachers and coaches, like I played sport a lot growing up, you have a choice to take what you want from those people, right? So I think that's the difference between successful people and maybe people that aren't as successful. Is successful people have the ability to network with those around them and take a little bit of something from everyone and put that into their own playbook or game or whatever you want to call it. And also, like, you're going to make mistakes along the way. Like, I've made so many mistakes along the way, and I've burnt so much money along the way to get to where I am now. And you know what? I've got so many more mistakes to make and so many more dollars to lose in this.
Same. It's the only way.
In this amazing world of medical aesthetics. Yeah.
I would say, though, for that reason, my personal view is that the big manufacturers and pharma companies can only partner with people that have been through that and done that to offer the best kind of support, because by definition, the people within those companies are on a comfortable salary and they're not living at this particular moment whilst they're working for them an entrepreneurial life. And so they don't live it. They don't have the lived experience necessarily. Some of them have, and they might have chosen to take a career afterwards, which is totally cool. But in the main, and by definition, if you're on a salary that arrives every month within reason, no matter how well you've performed on a monthly basis, then you're not living the experience of a small business owner, entrepreneur, you know, that kind of stress when you're first starting out of shit, how are we going to pay the mortgage? How are we going to pay the rent? How are we going to pay the payroll? Because things aren't looking too good. Whereas I think guys like you, guys like me, guys like George, my friend Richard, we've lived it. We have the lived experience of that kind of those fears, those.
We're still living it.
We're still living it. How do you get through it? You know, what are the ups and downs? So I feel like if you're going to go talking to customers about that kind of thing, to be truly authentic, surely you have to have lived and experienced it yourself, right? It's not enough to have swallowed a book about it or read a few articles about it. So I think there's companies with internal salaried business consultants that haven't necessarily had that experience. Was that fair?
They've got no idea. Like I can tell stories of when George and I first started, we were taking money out of our own bank accounts to pay our staff at times during COVID. And I like to call it like, I kill what I eat, right?
Yeah.
So do you. My salary every month, well, it's not a salary. My pay every month is different. And I can't even tell you what it's going to be next month because we are living that entrepreneurial life, and it's stressful, man. Like I think the people that are best at it are the people that aren't scared of it. And I think over time, I was first really scared of it when I got into it. And I think one of the things I've learned, one of the big things I've learned in this journey of my career is, one, backing myself. And if you're gonna, like I always say, my biggest investment right now is myself, because I'm the one who's, you know, making my paycheck each month. So backing myself is a huge one. But secondly is not fearing the worst case scenario, because I think COVID taught me a lot. Like I went to rock bottom COVID, there were some months where we were earning nothing, you know, because we were shut down. And life was pretty grim through some of those months. But I think I needed to go through that, if you know what I mean. It's like crazy. I needed to go
totally.
The other side. Yeah.
Totally.
I think that when you're hiring people to go on stage and talk to your accounts, you need, exactly like you said, you need someone who's gone through that, because then afterwards when there's Q&As and stuff like that, those answers are real answers, right? Like they're coming from people that are sitting in the shoes of the audience saying, yeah, you know what, this month, my month's not going well in my clinic. I'm probably not going to be able to pay myself. But yeah, this is what I'm trying to do to get out of it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And I think it's not that it's anybody's fault or it's just how it is, but that's surely where there is some disconnect when you've got a salaried salesperson sitting in a meeting with that person who's struggling to pay the payroll for this month. There is just a slight disconnect. And so if those companies and those groups of reps and what have you can partner with or find somehow a way to provide that kind of authentic support from someone who's been there and done it, then I think that's the way you can build rapport. And even just you being, as the manufacturer, the one that's facilitated that, the one that's created that connection and introduction to that content, that puts you in a strong position, I think, don't you?
Yeah, and people will remember that. Like if someone gives you an idea and you run with that idea, or someone offers you a relationship or puts you in touch with someone who makes you successful, you never forget the person that, like, you know, organized that beer, you know, like
the matchmaker. You know,
exactly. It's like we hear of all these amazing stories of like couples, like obviously people use Tinder a lot now, but back in the day when
I was here.
Yeah, back in the day when I was dating and when I met my wife, it was like friends bringing people together. You never forget who introduced you to your wife or your husband or your partner or whatever. No. It's the same in business. It's the same thing. Like, you know, that person introduced me to that person who I brought their device and now I'm making lots of money from their device. I owe them for life almost, you know? And yeah. I think that's what pharma companies need to, or big manufacturers need to understand, that it's not always about the sale. I think it's so much more than that.
It's almost like, and by the way, Saf and I were match made by a mutual friend. And still now, you know, years and years later, 17, 18 years later, if I put something on LinkedIn, I've been on holidays with the kids, or like we got married again recently in the Caribbean. And Lorraine.
You're a bit of a romantic though, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
I think deep down, you put up a hard show with this black bike about karate stuff, but I think deep down inside you are. You're a softie.
Black belt stuff is just a thinly veiled attempt to counteract the fact that I'm a big softie.
Yeah.
If you see me out there smashing breeze blocks, I'm really just thinking of long walks on the beach. Yeah, all of that. But anytime I post something like that, Lorraine, who's the lady that introduced us, always like drops me a little DM. Oh, I'm so proud. Yeah. Like, I can't believe you guys are still together and your family.
That's awesome.
I still remember she sent me a photo of Saf going, I think you'd really like my friend Saf. And I was like, I looked at the photo and I think you're right. I would.
I love it.
Let's set it up. Let's get that get that going, because I'm not getting any better looking. So let's do it quickly. So over that time then, what do you think have been? I've got two questions, which will bring us nearly to some sort of rambling conclusion, Nate. First one is, what have been the biggest hurdles that you've had to overcome in your clinic recently, or ones that you foresee coming up? And then a second one, very much related to that, is anyone that's just kind of in their first year, let's say, of starting their own thing. And in the UK, it's a big thing that you leave the National Health Service to do this kind of thing.
Yeah. It's similar here in Canada, actually. Yeah.
So anyone in that position, what your sort of top tips are going to be for those people?
Yeah, I always go back to I think in this world, there's a lot of knockers in this world, and there's a lot of people. I think for every person that says you're doing a good job, you can find probably 10 people that are trying to knock you down. So I think the biggest thing,
everyone in Canada and America, in England, knockers means boobs.
Yeah, exactly.
But carry on. There's a lot of knockers. Yes, good.
Yeah. But like, I think that self-doubt piece, like every day I self-doubt myself. My wife is my biggest cheerleader, and she's always like, Nathan, you just got to back yourself. You'll get out of this. Like, I'm not worried, and you're the main breadwinner in our family, putting like food on our table. And like, I live with no stress. Like, stop taking the stress on your shoulders. So I think the one thing is, I think people just need to back themselves. The other thing, and we say this on stage all the time, is, and I always see this as kind of like a negative for especially doctors in our industry, is we have the public system, and so many doctors try and come over to the private paying aesthetic side, and they want to keep a foot in the door on the other side. And I think that holds them back a lot, because in this industry, the medical aesthetics industry, you have to hustle, you have to give it your all. And so at some stage you have to rip that band-aid off and just go for it. And it might mean that for a couple of months you're not earning as much money, but like, prepare for that, right? Like, put some money aside and prepare for it and go for it. Because I think when you come on the other side, this world is an amazing world to play in. Like, I'm very biased because I'm so passionate about this industry. But like, the ones who do really well in this industry, and I see it all the time, because like, George and I are in clinics, like we're in thousands of clinics, or we're speaking to thousands of people at these conferences every year. And it's the people that do really well are the ones that just, you know, they pin their ears back and they just go for it. They don't have anything to hold them back.
There's people listening that I know. There's another dynamic to keeping one foot in the NHS, and it's not just the money part.
Yeah.
So it's the oath that they took to look after people. And but they still are. Feel, oh yeah, I get that, but I'm going to speak for them.
Yeah,
I'm not a doctor. I don't know what that feels like, but I know the ones that I have spoken to, even ones that have clinics doing very well, you know, multiple seven figures, still do a bit of NHS work. And actually, to be fair as well, during COVID, they went back.
NHS
to help out. So is there some noble cause there that's worth thinking of, like keeping your foot there for that reason? Or do you just think, look, if you're moving, go all in? And
well, I think we do so much, like in my opinion, like there's a lot of things that aren't covered from a public point of view in our industry that should be. Like for me, melasma is huge. It's melasma and acne. They are medical conditions. Rosacea, it's a chronic issue. So is melasma. These are issues that kids deal with from like puberty through to forever. And it changes someone mentally. It's a huge burden on their life. So I think they should be, I believe they should be covered under the public system, but they're not. But like, I think people look at our industry, especially people from the outside, they look at it in a totally different way. Like we do save people's lives. Like we just save it in a different way. Like we change their lives mentally. You got to think, like I always say to my staff, everyone wakes up in the morning and the first thing they normally do is they go to the washroom and then they go to wash their hands. And when they're washing their hands, they look in the mirror. And as a healthcare provider in our space, you own that. Like, if you can make someone feel good about themselves when they look in the mirror for the first time, to me, you're doing your job as a medical aesthetic professional. You know, whether it's whether you've done some great laser treatment, you've done some great neuromodulator, whatever, you've created a patient journey over 12 months. Because if that person likes what they see, their day is going to start on a different level. Their first conversation with their spouse is going to be more positive. With their kids is going to be more positive. Their attitude going to work that day is going to be so much more positive. Like, we have the ability in this industry to change people's lives for the better. And I think you need to be going to work each day knowing that you are a warrior still at the front line, helping people feel good about themselves, which is so important.
Maybe there's an argument to say then that the bigger the aesthetic space gets, the ethical, well-qualified part of it anyway. In the UK, we've got a similar issue to you guys, I think. Then maybe that's taking quite a bit of burden in some spaces off of the NHS and the public health systems, because it's the things that you bring to those patients and the ways in which you improve their life possibly prevents other issues.
100%. And I think the more we get into this, the more our clinics are going to have to be more holistic, 360 degree approach clinics, where we're not just going to be offering skin treatments. Well, it's already getting that way, right? Like I'm interviewing nutritionists right now to bring into my clinic because I'm looking to go into the body contouring space. So I'm looking at some devices right now. I want to be almost at some stage to be like this multifaceted clinic where people just come in who want to be healthy. And I call it like preventative or proactive medicine, right? Like you're preventing aging, but what does preventing aging mean? I believe preventing aging means like the full thing, like what we're eating, you know, the exercise we're doing, how we're looking after our skin by just using sunscreen every day and vitamin C, like using lasers to, you know, accelerate the health of your skin, keep yourself looking fresh and younger. Like there's so much to that. And I believe that like a doctor working in the medical aesthetic space still has a huge part to play in the success of us as a healthy nation or a healthy world. And the other thing is, because it is private money, there's a lot more money to experiment and look at other treatment options, and things that may be successful in our industry could maybe be taken into other industries, right? Like because there's the money to do it.
Yeah.
And to have to do these clinical trials. And like, we always have like once every 2 weeks in my clinic, we have an afternoon where the girls come in, our nurses come in, and we treat each other and we take some risks. Like we do some off-label stuff because we want to try it out on ourselves before we offer that service to our patients. Like that very rarely happens in the public system. Like what? Yeah. I never hear of it happening in the public system, right? So I think the medical aesthetic space could be pioneering other areas of healthcare just because people in our space are prepared to, you know, take these risks and look at other alternative options to make people feel better about themselves.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
What a great rant. I think we're going to...
Sorry, I got a little bit crazy there.
No, man, I love it. I think we're going to use some of that. It's great. yeah. Okay, so a couple of closing remarks.
Yeah.
One, I'm just interested in your clinic, but also the ones that you and George consult for.
Yeah.
In terms of the digital marketing piece, because I have to bring it back to my red thread.
I get that. You have to.
What's the biggest challenge with it? And what's the biggest source of inquiries for most of the people you deal with at the moment?
Yeah. The biggest challenge, I think, is an easy one. I think this is a challenge just on the industry as a whole. There's so many monthly subscriptions that a clinic has to pay in regards to like everything from as simple as their EMR to like their text messaging to their, you know, we use Constant Contact and MailChimp to SEO to social media to, and it feels like a lot of clinics have like 15 or 20 different touch points to do all these different things. And it's like, what's the password for that again? You know, like to send out a text message campaign or whatever it is. I think, and I think you're starting to nail this, or you're doing this very well from your point of view, is having that one-stop shop of, you know, someone or some organization that can kind of do it all for you, that you trust. I think for clinics to be successful, I think that's going to be a huge thing, especially the way private equity is gobbling up clinics at the moment. Like, I don't know if that's happening. I'm guessing it's happening in the UK a lot as well.
It is at one end of the scale. Yeah, there's quite a bit of consolidation going on.
Yeah, which hey, it's just part of it. It's some I see some positives and negatives to it, but I think that's probably one of the big frustrations. And then the other one is like, there's a lot of people out there that, and I see it, like they promise the world, and I'm like, why are you putting that ad out there? Like, there is no way you can promise that. And I feel sometimes some doctors coming into the space, they see the promise and they get a little bit hooked by that promise.
They do. And I think you're talking about the guys that are promising to fill your book next week, right?
Yeah. Those sorts of guys.
The really funny, amazing thing is that they email me promising me the same thing too.
Yeah, I know. And what annoys me about that is, in all that muddy water, or like actually googly gosh or whatever you want to call it, it leaves the people that are actually doing the real work and telling the truth about like their results kind of get washed out and put to the bottom of the line. And maybe you should be having the meeting with them instead of the one that's promising the world, because like, how can you promise that? How can you promise that kind of stuff? Yeah. And you know better than me because you work in this space. But
yeah, I can get you, Nathan, I guarantee you I can get you 30 leads tomorrow. The only caveat is they'll all be shit.
Yeah, that's the thing, and
they'll be of no use to you really. And half of them won't turn up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's crazy. And I can see why doctors first coming in are like, well, I only have to pay that to get 30 leads. That's great, because they're naive to the space. But I think it burns them. And then when someone like you comes along, it makes it so much harder for you to have that conversation because they've been burnt in the past, right?
I mean, we do meet a lot of wounded puppies. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We're kind of good at quite quickly showing people where the way and the truth and the light. I mean, one thing that's always been interesting to me is that we usually start with a bit of coaching and we write a plan for people and we give them the plan and we go, there you go. If you want to do it, go for it. But pretty much 9 times out of 10, they just want us to do it, which is fine. That's what we're here for. But, and I guess it's no different to the reason I don't pick up a needle and start randomly treating myself or other people for that matter. People would be seriously injured and disfigured if I tried to do that. Because you've got things that you're good at and things that you're not good at, and people should stick to them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like I try and in my clinic, in my business anyway, I try and pay people for stuff that I can't do. I'd like, because I've attempted it in the past and it just, you get half a job or it takes your focus off where you're at. Like if you're a doctor, just be a good doctor. I see so many doctors ruining their practice because they're trying to be the manager, the digital marketing specialist, the this and the that. And that just leads to making mistakes when you're the doctor, in my opinion. It's
interestingly, like, it's how people look at it as well. Because one of the questions we ask in our kind of initial assessment, and by the way, just so everyone knows, we're assessing you as a potential client as much as you're assessing us as a provider. However, one of the questions is, how much have you invested so far in, let's say, your website? And if they've built it themselves, they always say, I haven't invested anything. And we always flip that back on them and go, okay, so it was free. Yeah, I did it myself. Okay, great. How long did it take? I was working on it like evenings and I was getting frustrated with it and I did it on Sundays and it took me months to get it right. Okay. And how much do you like to earn? I want to earn £2,000 a day. Okay, so your website costs you $50,000.
Yeah.
Nice one. That's great. And then they go, oh, wait. Like, I didn't look at it properly. And then the other thing we see a lot of, I don't know if you come across this as well, is that sometimes marketing is viewed as a cost rather than an investment. And it's more the case when it's one person and that money's coming straight out of their pocket. So it means a huge deal, which I completely understand. But even in bigger clinics, it's not thought of in terms of return on investment or investment for the future. It's seen as a cost. And you talked a lot about the different subscriptions and things like that. And that's where I think the answer for people like yourself and George and people like me and my team, it's a partnership and we're becoming part of your extended team. We're not just a, you know, subscription for your consulting or a subscription for our done for you services. It's a partnership. Plastic surgeon, by the way, that we've worked with month in, month out for 14 years.
Yeah.
That's a partnership.
I think that's important as well, because I go back to private equity again. Like if you're not one of those private equity clinics, and I don't like using the word competing, but like, because I like to collaborate, but like those companies have a team built to do that. So I think as a smaller clinic, you need to start partnering with the right people who are extensions of your team, because you need to rely on them. Like, because marketing is a huge part of it. The other thing with marketing though, I find, Rick, is a lot of people underestimate the fishing at their feet as well. Like I feel like they're always so concerned with new business. Get me new business when they haven't exhausted.
Oh yeah.
Exhausted the database that they currently have.
Yeah. 100% agree. The easiest people to sell to are the ones that have already bought from you.
100%. And digital marketing plays a huge role in that. Like just simple newsletter, you know, every month, like the people underestimate that. Like a simple, maybe like text message campaign to like your existing database or social media campaign to you. And I think that's where companies like yours can really work with your partners to just be more strategic about that, because it's hard to be a healthcare provider and work 6-7 days a week seeing patients and then come up with your marketing strategy.
Yeah, like it's a lot.
No other industry in the world would ask a business owner to do that, right? It's, I just feel like our industry, I don't know why, but the doctor feels like they have to do everything, or the nurse or whoever runs the business feels like they have to like run it all, but you don't partner with.
I think also because by and large, medical professionals, surgeons, doctors, nurses, dentists, whoever, are very smart people. And so they probably can do it, but it's going to eat right into their life. They can do it all night, all weekend. You know, they're very intelligent people in the most part. And so they're going to be able to do it, but should they?
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
All right. Last thing. What top three things would you go back and tell yourself to do or do differently 10 years ago? So you go back and you're whispering in your own ear 10 years ago to achieve success faster.
That's a good one. Can I do one for clinics that I think clinics need to do at the moment to success quicker? Okay. So my biggest pet hate in this industry, and I see so many clinics doing it, and I'm trying to coach my clinic at the moment because I brought into an existing clinic out of this, is we've got to stop pushing units of neuromodulator and we've got to sell a solution. So this 30 units here, 50 units here, whatever, I think it kills clinics. It stops clinics from scaling and it ruins their margin. And it just makes you an average clinic. You have to have the ability to look at a patient and see how they're aging, see how they're, like, if I'm talking face, see how their face is aging, ask the right questions, get the right information to build like a 12-month plan. And it's 50 units of Botox ain't going to help them. It's like a collaborative effort of laser devices, neurotoxins, maybe filler, skincare. Like it's a full, complete package, because at the end of the day, I've been taught by this industry, and I think it's because Allergan did it so well when they first came out, is, you know, Botox is going to cure the world. It's going to make you look younger forever. It's not the case. Like, neuromodulator is just one part of the journey. Sell the solution. Like, why are they aging? Where are they aging? How are you going to prevent that? And by doing that, you're going to increase your margins, because you're going to be bringing things like devices in, which I know in my clinic, I can make 60 to 90% margin on my devices. I make around 20 to 40% margin on my neurotoxin, but you're also going to get better results for the patient. So I think that is one thing. If you want to scale your business in this medical aesthetic industry, don't sell units. Look at the problem and get to the root cause of the problem. Why is that person aging? How do I slow it down? How do I prevent that? How do I freshen up their look? And how do I give them a treatment plan forever?
And the worst part about all of that is the market did it to itself. So it went and educated the patients to then come in asking, how much is it for half a mil, please? The worst thing that could have happened to the whole market, in my opinion.
100%. And it's like, we had a patient who came in on Friday to our clinic and saw my business partner, who's our lead nurse injector. And she came in because she was recommended by a friend. She wasn't happy with her current injector. And my nurse injector, she's amazing, like, brilliant. Like, I love the work she does. And she came in and wanted a solution. So we gave her a solution. And she just spent the whole consult, well, how many units is that going to be? Or like, how many? And it was just killing me, because she's so conditioned to asking how many units. And we were trying to say, don't worry about the units. Let's think about the skincare and the laser devices that you need to do. And then she came out of it at the end saying, oh, that's a lot more units than I'm normally used to paying for. And I'm like, I turned around to her. I said, well, hang on. You've come to us because you're not happy with your current injector.
Yeah.
we're giving you a solution here. Like, we're giving, like, you've told me your problems. Like, she had issues with pigmentation. And I'm like, well, neurotoxin ain't going to get rid of your pigmentation. You know, like, she had issues with the way her eyes were looking, her forehead. She said, every time I get injected, I feel like my soft lines aren't softened. And obviously the injector wasn't using enough product. And so it's, I think you're totally right. We have conditioned ourselves to be like that, and it needs to change. And as soon as you start saying no to patients, or we'll go down the road to see that person that will charge you by the unit, or only do 30 units, I think that's when you're going to gain the power back as a professional in this industry. And I think that's something I've learned a lot. And it's, I've learned it the hard way. The power of the no is really, really important.
Yeah.
From the point of view.
Totally.
I think I went off on a tangent about it.
No,
passionate about this right now.
But that actually, if we're going to leave people with one bit of advice, if they didn't already know, is that that one is huge for me. Because I see it, obviously we build clinic websites, we're running campaigns, and usually the input into us might start out as being based on milliliters and volumes and units. And to me, coming at it from a completely non-clinical, I'm not a skincare expert, I'm not a medical professional, even just from a business perspective, it doesn't make any sense to me, because you're then, surely you're just a distributor. You're not adding any real value or expertise or flair or solutions. You're selling a product at a markup.
Yeah, and you commoditize what we do, right? Like, it's like soon will be people get Botox from a vending machine, right? Like, it's
maybe.
Yeah, maybe, but I think that's when you're building a brand for your clinic, you want to build a brand so people come to you because they're coming to you for professional advice. And it's whether they like you as a person, they like the way you make them feel when you're in their room, or is it they just like hanging out with you and talking to you? I know there's so many patients that we have in our clinic that, like, I don't even think they care about the result. They just love lying on the bed and being treated by some of our nurses, you know? It's almost like they're paying for that 1 hour of just being in our clinic.
Yeah, it's the experience, isn't it?
It is. And I love that. I love that. Like, they don't even look at their before and afters. They don't care.
Yeah, which is, well, they trust you. Yeah. You know, they were happy when they first came in. They like you. You know what you're doing, and it's time out of their normal schedule. It's something they're not going to get by purchasing something on Amazon. They can't get it on Netflix. They can't get it through Zoom. It's the experience.
Yeah. So I think that's just the being. Yeah. So top three things, I don't know, like, continued education and collaboration's huge. When I first came into this industry, and I think it's because I came from such a pharmaceutical background and it was kind of cutthroat. When I first came in, I was really big about the competition. Like, how do we knock out the competition? And now I'm totally opposite. I'm like, no, I want competition and I want to collaborate with the competition. I want to meet them at conferences and find out what they're doing well, share what I'm doing well.
Yeah,
I want to go see what they're doing in their clinic. I want to invite them to see what I'm doing in my clinic. I think...
You know what you just described, don't you? Two mindsets.
Yeah.
The one is scarcity and the other is abundance.
Yeah.
Because if you're in a scarcity mindset, you're like, God, there's only so much business and I need to defend, you know, and if they get a patient, then I've lost a patient.
Yeah.
Not the case. There is an abundance. There's enough for everyone forever. It's never ending. There's an abundance. And so if you have that abundance mindset, I've always found, like, everything gets better because you're more optimistic. You're not driven by fear. You're driven by ideas and positivity. And the fact that there's plenty, you can take ideas, take risks. You describe two mindsets.
Yeah, and we're only going to get better doing that. Like, the people I learn from most is that being at these conferences, and like, whether it's like a different wavelength on a device versus like a different way of using a skincare product with a patient, or is it infusing a different topical? Maybe like just changing a protocol by, you know, adding another device or another skincare product into that protocol. Like, these are the things that, like, the golden nuggets that I think make our clinics better. And then I think the last thing for me 12 years ago, if I looked at myself, I should have looked at myself in the mirror and just said, Nathan, you got to be prepared to hustle. Like, the more you hustle, the more you will get out of this industry. And I think as a younger kid, 12 years ago, I don't think I understood what hustle means. I think I understand it a lot more now. And you've got to be prepared to wake up each day and try and give it your all, because you got to work.
I think why us three get on, because I mean, I have the kind of attitude that nobody outworks me.
Yeah.
Nobody outworks me. Yeah. And that's not because I've got some disease with work or anything. It's just that, like you, I'm passionate about what I do. I'm equally passionate about the amount of bullshit there is about the kind of stuff that we do, like you talked about. People making guarantees and promises and turning up cold in your inbox, sliding in your DMs, promising you the world. We don't ever contact anyone cold.
Yeah.
Only person that contacted me cold recently that I like was you.
No, it's the hustle is huge, isn't it? It is huge.
It's everything. And that's a difficult thing if you've worked in a public health system for a decade or more, where most of the business aspects were handled and given to you. Yeah, there's no shortage of patients if you work in the accident and emergency department. Friday night, there's a 7-8 hour queue. There's no marketing you have to do in the NHS. There's no dealing with business partners or anything like that. So that's a really difficult transition to then suddenly be responsible for all of that. And like you said, it's only really the people that are prepared to roll up their sleeves, get their head around it to some extent, but then at the same time, be open to delegating, because there's things that I think you, as the business owner, you need to understand what needs to be done and why. You don't have to sit there till 5 a.m. trying to do it yourself.
And that's it takes us back to the don't be scared about being coached either, or having a coach, because I think a lot of doctors come into this industry and they're like, you know what, I've been to university for 15 years, I've worked as a physician for another 10-15 years, I don't need a coach. And I always say to those people, well, why does Tiger Woods, you know, the greatest golf player of all time, still have a coach? You know, why does Roger Federer, arguably one of the greatest tennis players of all time, still have a coach? Like, why do all these amazing sports people need a coach still? And even if you do think you're the most amazing medical aesthetic physician or nurse or business person or marketer, I think you still have a coach. And that's why I love our relationship. I love my relationship with George. I love my relationship with Nick and Steph Tverdick and Lisa Krause on our podcast, because like they're my coaches. Like, you guys are my coaches. I think that's so, so important. I still consider my dad a huge mentor of mine. He has a huge influence on my life. I always look to him when I'm making big business decisions, because I know that these are the people that have like my best interest at heart as well.
I have a coach and mentors as well on the digital stuff. People may not realize. Shout out to Jason Swenk in Colorado. So he's a guy that absolutely smashed it in the agency space, sold his agency for something like $50 million, built his own home at the top of a mountain in Durango, Colorado.
Has he pieced out now? Or is he still?
He has snowboarded out.
Yeah.
So he snowboards and he offers advice to agencies and he holds masterminds on the top of the mountain in his amazing house. And he gets how to build systems and do things in digital agencies. And he's my kind of, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi to my Skywalker.
I've got a question for you then, Rick, before.
Go on then.
So do you think you have, and this is a question that I've been asked and I don't know the answer, do you think you ever have the ability to peace out? Like, do you think you'll ever be in a stage of your career where you can drop the tools and say, you know what, I'm done, and like I'm checking out, because my wife keeps asking me that question, like at what stage is enough enough? Like, am I just going to keep buying businesses and keep trying to grind or grind it out day in, day out? Or is there a time in my life where I'm going to be satisfied with everything I've done and give it a rest? And I think you and I are very similar. So I want to know your answer to this.
Looking at my face, you know the answer. Okay. So it's multifaceted.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want to sound like a dickhead, but financially I could do that now.
Okay.
But so that also tells me that the idea of retirement, I don't like.
Yeah.
And that I would get bored.
Yeah.
And I think I'd get so much enjoyment from, and this sounds so cheesy when you hear yourself say it, but it is true, I promise.
Yeah.
Get so much enjoyment out of coaching people, working with the brands, seeing our clinics get results from what we do, working with my team, meeting people like you, doing this kind of speaking on stage. It's fun. Yeah, so like, I don't feel like I want to, I probably will slow down a bit.
Yeah.
And there's lots of things that myself and my wife and my family, we want to do, but we also do it. Like, I work really hard, but we go away all the time. Where are we now? It's like beginning of March. We've been in 6 countries already.
Yeah, yeah.
and only one of those was for work. 2 of those were for work.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest are just little breaks and stuff like that. And then last year we went away for nearly 6 weeks and I didn't even look at work.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like I'm doing a mixture. I'm kind of, I have tiny mini retirements all year long.
Yeah.
But I also work really, really hard because I enjoy it. And because, I don't know, like when I was young, didn't have a pot to piss in. So I'm kind of, I don't want to be broke ever again. So there's something in the back of my mind that's like, don't turn away that opportunity. Like, don't do that. But at some point, yeah, I'll have to flip the table a little bit, because Saf will be like, come on.
Yeah, I know. Because I'm nowhere near where you are, where it's, I don't have the financial security yet, but I want to get there. But I wonder if I could ever turn it off. That worries me, that part of my life, because I don't think I can.
No, yeah. And it's, obviously it wasn't always like that, but it gives me a clue that, being honest, I have, I suppose, not, I haven't slowed down, but I don't stress as much, and I have said no to some things.
Yeah.
But then that makes me nervous anyway, because I think, like, if you do get a few quid in your pocket, you then get something called affluenza. It's contagious. You start to go, yes, it's all fine.
Yeah.
And then you might miss something, and you know, something might blindside you. But yeah, I think we're probably quite similar. I think we'll always be doing something, because it's fun.
It is. This industry is unbelievable.
We don't need, you know, the idea of you being at home all day, every day might seem great to your wife now, but you would piss her off on day 4. Like, she'd be fed up and sick of the sight of you.
She says she wants me to travel less, but every time I start to travel a little bit less, I ruin the dynamic at home, and she wants me to piss off.
See, yeah, that's when it works. I think it's the as long as you keep coming home, then it's fine. Like, it's like my dad retired 2 or 3 years ago, and I think at the beginning it was great for him, but now he is a couple of years into it and he's bored shitless, and he's constantly like, he's been doing the same. He's a builder, and he's been doing the same thing for 45 years, and he's had the same phone number for 45 years. So the phone at home still rings a lot.
Yeah.
And every time he picks it up, my mum's looking at him with daggers. You're not doing any jobs. You're not going to say yes to that. And he goes, he puts his hand over, he's like, no, it's just a little thing. I can help them with the...
I love it.
And he'll go, yeah, I could do that for you, Dave. No probs. And he's off again for a couple of days. Cash in hand, no worries. So it's because he will probably start seizing up if he doesn't do that. You have to keep moving in some way, don't you?
I think whether so. Whether
it's mentally or physically. But yeah, I think we're aligned on that one. So it'd be me and George in our 80s on stage with a walking stick. Like,
I think George has the ability to tap out, though. He does.
You reckon?
He says he does anyway, but he'll end up in Greece somewhere on the beach. But
yeah, I can see that actually. Yeah,
yeah. He has the ability to. Yeah.
But we'll build something.
Can go visit him. We can go visit him in Greece.
We can visit him and go, hey George, this looks boring. What are you doing?
Yeah. He'll come out. He'll make some guest appearances.
Yeah.
This has been awesome, man. Like, this was...
Yeah, absolutely. Loved it.
I hope I didn't rant too much, but...
That's the whole point of it, is so we can have a good old rant.
That's just the way I am. I get passionate and I...
There's no rules, you know. If we were doing this podcast for a corporate, there'd be a script and we'd have to do what we were told, but it's mine, so we can do what we like.
Yeah, I didn't even write any notes. I know you sent me questions, but like...
We didn't get through half of them because we just see how it goes.
Yeah, that's awesome. how do you sign off then? How do you normally sign off?
I say thank you, mate. I really appreciate you coming. And I really enjoyed our chat. And I'm looking forward to us doing stuff together. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, no, it will be good. And thank you to anyone who listened to this. And feel free to reach out. I'm guessing you're going to put my social handle and stuff down the bottom.
I'm going to drive everybody over to you and we'll see. They can bother you and ask you questions.
I'd love to answer any questions. I'm happy to chat with anyone in the industry. I love collaborating, put it that way.
Sounds good, man. Thank you for coming, and I'll be in touch again soon.
Cheers, buddy.
So that's it for this episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed the conversation and found some ideas and inspiration in there. As I said at the start, do let me know who you'd like to hear from, who you'd like me to speak to. I've got a very exciting guest coming up on the next episode, somebody who is absolutely smashing it out there at the moment, and somebody who I'm sure you'll all be familiar with. So looking forward to that one. In the meantime, keep up to date with our social updates, join the Aesthetic Entrepreneurs, and if you need any help, contact ltf.digital or find me at rickyoneal.co.uk. See you next time, guys. Cheers.